The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's approaching 4 minutes past nine. You're very welcome along to the programme on this Tuesday, the 20th of January. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. It's great to have you on board for the show. We've got lots coming up, of course. We're going to keep you up to date with all the big topics that are important to you. We've got Community Garda information coming up for you just after 10 o'clock, where you hear the very latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána Síochána First. That and so much more besides. And we really encourage you to get involved in the conversation. This is your show. How do you get involved? Well, WhatsApps and texts, we get them in on 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. You can give us a call either on 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And we've made it easier than ever for you to listen to the podcast of this program. Just if you can't listen every day, or if you want to listen back, or you want to catch up, we are on Spotify and iTunes as well, by the way. So most of you use Spotify. You can search out the Greg Hughes Show podcast, like and subscribe, or just like it, and give us a review there too, if you don't mind. It's good to have. But also, if you'd put a wee bell on, what it does is it tells you when there's a new episode, and it's all there for you in one file to enjoy if you're out for a walk, out jogging, out at the gym, whatever you might be doing, or doing nothing for that matter. Anyway, we're there for you. And that also applies, by the way, to the overnight replay. If you're listening deferred, you can still comment on anything we're talking about by emailing comments at highlandradio.com. Troubling times potentially for carers. It's covered in a couple of the papers today. I'm going to start with the Irish Daily Mail. Tens of thousands of carers face being hit with unexpected taxes since Revenue started sharing data with the Department of Social Protection this month. While the carer's allowance and benefit have always been taxable as a form of income, many did not know they had to declare it. There are currently 99,421 people in receipt of the carer's allowance. Expenditure in 2025 was around £1.24 billion. The issue of carers had a huge role in the last election and led to the Programme for Government commitment to abolish means testing for the allowance over the lifetime of the coalition. Fianna Fáil TD John McGuinness raised the matter in the Dáil last week. He said from January 1st this year, the Department of Social Protection has been sharing information with Revenue in relation to those in receipt of carers' benefit and carers' allowance who are on the PAYE income list for last year. They may have been working a few hours a week. To inform them they are now to be taxed, the tax will be deducted at source. He asked the Taoiseach, is it possible to exclude carers' benefit and carers' allowance as an income? Can we ensure that fair play is applied here? These are carers. They are not earning from it. In response, Micheál Martin said that he would look into the matter. So there are potential tax liabilities there for PAYE workers who are also receiving a carer's allowance. Is that something that affects you? Let us know. 086 60 25000. We'll bring you more details on that information, of course, later on in the programme. I was referencing yesterday that given the whole hoo-ha with Donald Trump, that we were facing into weeks and weeks and weeks of speculation as to whether or not Micheál Martin should go to the White House. And it began earlier than I anticipated, because it's covered in many of the papers this morning. Taoiseach Micheál Martin will not alter plans to visit the White House for a meeting with Donald Trump in March, despite the growing hostilities of the US president towards Europe. This is in the Irish Independent. As Mr. Trump refused to rule out using military force to take control of Greenland, an autonomous territory of Denmark, some EU leaders sought to dial down tensions and prevent the clashes from turning into a new trade war. While the invitation to the White House on St. Patrick's Day has not yet been formally received, it's understood preparations are underway for the annual visit, which is not deemed to be under threat from the latest developments. It would take place at a crunch moment for EU-US relations. So what will happen with this story is it'll rumble for a little bit. The opposition will have their say as to whether or not he will go. The government will double down. He will go anyway, blah, blah, blah. People will say, well, you would have gone if it was you in power. It's the same story every single year. There's always a crisis as to why we should or shouldn't go to the White House, and this year is no difference. Interestingly, as the whole Greenland row rumbles on, US the dollar has fallen, the euro has gone up, and gold, which is seen as the safe haven for people with money, it's at a record all-time high. So there is some concerns. I'm reading this one from the Irish Times because it has come up on this programme from you, the listener, time and time again, and it's the length of apprenticeships. Many of our young people are thinking of apprenticeships or on apprenticeships. There is this misnomer that everybody goes to third level. Of course they don't. Many people go down the apprenticeship route, but for some it can be so long and so exhaustive that it's not worth it in the end. Well, the government is seeking to reduce the time it takes apprentices to learn key trades from 4 years to 3 years to address skill shortages in the construction sector. But it's also good news potentially for those on courses or those in apprenticeships to get decent money for the work that they're doing sooner. Minister for Further and Higher Education, James Lawless, said he wrote to Solace and Quality and Qualifications Ireland, that's the QQI, two key state bodies, and set training standards for apprenticeships to consider whether the duration of some courses could be cut. The move is aimed at bringing more skilled workers into the construction and other sectors to address the housing crisis. So this would be potentially good news. I would imagine you would have learned your trade for the most part after 3 years, wouldn't you? So a reduction from 4 to 3 would be welcomed, I presume. I'm not sure how that might apply to those of you listening who are currently in apprenticeships, but we'll see. We'll track it to see where that story goes. A long-awaited inquest into the death of Belfast schoolboy Noah Donoghue is to get underway. The selection of a jury is expected to take place at the City Coroner's Court ahead of opening statements later this week. This is reported in the Irish Sun and other papers. And I know a lot of you have taken a particular interest in this story, as many people have right across the country, because there's an awful lot of unanswered questions, quite a bit that doesn't make sense, and threads you would feel in the investigation that need to be pulled. Where the hearing, nearly 6 years after the 14-year-old was found dead in a drain, will be overseen by Mr. Justice Rooney. It's hoped the inquest will provide Noah's family, led by his campaigning mum Fiona, with answers to the mystery of what happened to him. The St. Malachy's College pupil vanished as he cycled to meet friends in June 2020. He was seen falling off his bike and riding with no clothes on. Again, elements of this story that ordinarily just don't make sense. His body was found after a major search. In a message of support for the family, North Belfast MP John Finucane said, "I hope this process delivers the truth and justice they deserve." You would hope it does, but the questions that are there, it's hard to see how they can all be answered. But listen, we wait in hope. I mean, often for no reason whatsoever. There can be fallouts in families, you know, young people that don't speak to their dads, siblings that don't speak to each other. It often goes on behind closed doors, but there is a very major fallout between the Beckhams, and a lot of people out there are interested in what David and Victoria Beckham do because they're celebrities, and I know a lot of you are following the story, so you might be familiar with this. Brooklyn Beckham has publicly disowned his parents in a furious tirade online. The 26-year-old claims Victoria and David have been cruel to his new wife, Nicola Pelter, in the bombshell outburst, and he made it clear he's got no wish to make up with them as he accused them of controlling behaviour. It's so often, you know, parents that maybe with the person that a son or daughter is with, they have concerns and they express them privately and then people push them away. It feels a little bit like the Harry and Meghan situation, if you know what I mean. That a lot of people would feel that Meghan isn't necessarily good for Harry, but he's doubled down and will do anything she says or will back her on anything. And Brooklyn Beckham and his wife, Nicola, it seems to be the same. The only difference in this compared to our lives is this is happening publicly. So he says they've been trying to control them. He said in an explosive post on Instagram, "My parents have been trying endlessly to ruin my relationship before my wedding, and it hasn't stopped. My mum cancelled making Nicholas's dress in the 11th hour, despite how excited she was to wear her design, forcing her to urgently find a new dress." Tragic. Talking about his big day, he also claimed, "The night before our wedding, members of my family told me that Nicola was not blood and not family. My mum hijacked my first dance with my wife, which had been planned weeks in advance, to a romantic song in front of our 500 wedding guests. Mark Anthony called me onto the stage, where in the schedule was planned to be my romantic dance with my wife, but instead my mum was waiting to dance with me. I mean, it's all kind of trivial, isn't it? You know, she was going to make her dress and then she didn't, and then she wanted to dance with me and we didn't get our first dance, but anyway, there you go. And just to reference that story that Gucci referenced just before nine, a lucky lotto player who scooped a €500,000 prize waited until just days before the deadline to collect it after losing the key to the locked box they kept the ticket in. The player admitted that they knew all along that they had won the top prize in the October 12 draw, but waited nearly 90 days to claim their prize from the National Lottery HQ last Saturday. On the night of the draw, the player checked the ticket using the National Lottery app. Since that night, they decided they would wait and deal with the win in the new year, storing the ticket for safekeeping in a lockbox. Discovering they had misplaced the key, they continued to remain positive, claiming it was still the best placed for it, and at least I knew the ticket was safe. With the deadline fast approaching, the lost key finally reappeared in time for them to claim the €500,000. It's a great story. The calmness there, I'm sorry, I just don't trust myself. I would have to just keep opening and closing the box to make sure it was there. But that was one in Donegal, I believe. So best wishes to them to enjoy that money. On Thursday, last Thursday, Errico College had a critical incident in the school where a student was taken seriously ill. Now, thankfully, she's okay, but the school says they're determined to ensure that such an incident does not happen again. They go on to say that vaping is an extremely dangerous activity. The Irish government over the years has put a huge amount of time into reducing smoking in our society, and this has largely been very successful. However, we now have a different problem and a different method of consuming nicotine. The nicotine in vapes is unregulated and highly addictive, with people taking in far more than they ever would in a regular cigarette. The school is urging people to please speak to the young person in your life about this. It's important that parents and guardians are vigilant about their young person's activities, their friends group, phone usage, money being spent, and any changes in mood or behaviour. Christina McElhaney is alcohol and other drugs coordinator and joins me now. Good morning to you, Christina.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, obviously, you know, we're not commenting on individual instances, but the school were obviously moved enough to feel that they need to send this email out to parents and guardians. And these are the cases we hear about, Christina, but I'm sure there's more than that.
Do you know, there is very interestingly, Greg, we're in a situation as far as drugs and kind of, you know, the methods of the usage of different types of drugs and the kind of semi-synthetic cannabinoids that are introduced now into vapes, and young people are getting their hands on these things, that we actually had a situation in 2025 where there were 169 young people attended addiction services around the country because of their addictive nature with particular semi-synthetic chemicals that might be in these particular vapes, you know, that are, you know, causing harm to young people.
Now, the school themselves reference Spice. I presume that's one of these synthetic substances we're talking about?
Yeah, that would be a fully synthetic substance, but we had new semi-synthetic cannabinoids that actually came to the fore in the last 2 years, and that all emanated out of a change in legislation in America, believe it or not, which was a farm bill which allowed people to produce hemp. Now, we're in a world of very clever scientific kind of, you know, modification of particular chemicals, and so what was modified from that were these chemicals called HHC, which would be hexahydrocannabinol. And what that actually is a semi-synthetic cannabinoid. Now, when we're talking about the kind of introduction of these new chemicals that can be in vapes, like last year alone, there were 14 new semi-synthetic cannabinoids and, you know, kind of novel benzodiazepines, all controlled in Ireland. You know, so new legislation had to catch up with those particular products and actually ban them. The effects of these particular type of products could be anything from exacerbating asthma, creating COPD, if people are using it for quite some time. And they did a big study of 250,000 people. And what they found was that, there are significant levels of COPD, etc., attached to these vapes. So when they burst onto the market, there was no medical and scientific research. So what happened was it became a replacement, for people trying to get off cigarettes. As these products evolved, then there were chemicals, unscrupulous kind of chemicals put into different vapes, for the purpose of, the psychoactive component of that. But also a lot of people began using vapes to come away from cigarettes. Now, if cigarettes have about 7,000 chemicals in them, these vapes have 2,000 or more chemicals in them. But the interesting thing is those chemicals might change even when they're heated up. So what you're taking in is an aerosol into your lungs. Okay, so if you take an aerosol into the lungs, it's not supposed to be there, it will cause harm eventually. Now, the longer that these products are around, they really began to be studied, from they were invented around the early 2000s. We haven't been using them long enough as human beings to see what the long-term effects are from these products, but I can only say it's wise to stay away from them. And what we've also discovered is that it's actually encouraging young people now when they get the nicotine, in the vape, that obviously we get the nicotine cravings, which we might look for a stronger source of nicotine then, which is leading young people on to smoking again. And
Well,
it's having
once
the
you've vaped
reverse
and
effect.
you're addicted to nicotine, it's not that big a step to start smoking because you're already parking, health and concerns. But I mean, whatever the conversation about a smoking cessation tool, and that argument and that conversation's been had many, many times. The thing that annoys me really is that people. Young people particularly are getting to addicted to nicotine, having never ever smoked, and it's the most horrendous thing to try and cease. And smokers that transition to vaping often maybe look at the nicotine content and there's 6, there's 12, there's 21, whereas these disposables it's 18, 22, and this is far higher nicotine than you might get in a cigarette. Now, I'm not saying one's better than the other, don't get me wrong. So it's really, really concerning and it's really hard to get off them. But that's bad enough, right? But where are they getting these synthetic drugs that are in the vapes also as well? I mean, are they broadly available? Is it black market? Is it online or?
It can be online, it can be black market, and it can be friends and acquaintances. And it doesn't matter what drug it might be, from cocaine to ketamine to e-tablets to any type of psychoactive substance. Look, our young people are very well connected. We're very well connected through the internet and through WhatsApp and, all of those different media platforms where we can access substances very, very easily. And they're far more informed than what we might be as adults, So really, what we're talking about is adults getting themselves informed as well, and we're going to approach that. And there will be information evenings and stuff like that that, we'll be coordinating around that. But we have reached a point in the world, okay? And this is what we need to listen to. Drug use is on the increase, okay? Synthetic chemical substances are being developed and invented every single year, and they were being invented at a rate of almost 100 per year for the last 20 years, which is absolutely incredible. Now, it's reduced a little, might be down to 50 or 60 a year, but every single year, what we're actually seeing is new inventions, new chemical compounds coming onto the market, and we need to get the awareness around that up a little bit, Now, here's the thing. You could have a number of people using the same thing, but one particular person might have very difficult side effects from that because we're all made differently. Our brains and our bodies respond differently to these chemicals as well. So we need to get heightened awareness around our parents so they can have an informed conversation generally out there in our communities. And that's what I do. I go around and talk to different communities, schools, teach in third level and develop training around it. But what I know about these particular kind of ways of inventing chemicals now is that our legislation will always be in catch up with it. And that's why we got to ban, all these HHC semi-syntheticals in July of last year, but you can bet your bottom dollar when it comes to end of 2026, 27, we're going to have more synthetic chemicals on the market.
Yeah, and
And
what's
here's the
ex
interesting thing,
Go
Greg,
ahead,
just
yeah.
to add to that, is that these psychoactive substances can come in so many different forms now, because traditionally a powder would have been this, smoking something would have been this, but we can get a liquid, crystal, powder. We can get so many different derivatives now that, it's almost impossible to keep up. It's a full-time job keeping up with
And
all
the
of
thing
these different derivatives.
too, you talk about cocaine or other drugs. Unfortunately, because of vaping, those who are looking to make money out of misery, they would see the distribution network already there, right? So how do you get a 15-year-old on cocaine? I'm sure there are ways, but if they're vaping, you get this drug into them through the thing they're already addicted to. The challenge we have here, Christina, though, particularly, is it's like children are already very good at concealing the fact that they're vaping nicotine. There's no particular odor on it. The items can be quite small. They can be easy to hide. They can even do it in their bedroom, right? You might go in there and it smells a bit fruity, but they might light a candle. It's not like cigarettes back in the day. So we're trying to sort of say, don't take any of these synthetic drugs because something really bad could happen to you. But actually, we don't even know they're vaping to sort of take that step to the next. It's very difficult for parents out there.
Yes. Okay. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to surprise you. Okay. And this is easily available. And my advice would be for parents to look this up. You can get vapes in the form that look like a marker. You can get vapes in the form that are a hoodie, and the string on the hoodie is attached to a vape. You can get vapes that are a peak cap, and there's a tube attached to that peak cap. So these are the things. I mean, even if you can get vapes, believe it or not, and people can look this up. They can be ordered on the internet. You could search a school bag for a vape, and the vape could be in the form of a lipstick. So that's where we're at with these type of products. So it really does take an incredible amount of vigilance to kind of monitor whether
But
people are
that
using
market
vapes or
wouldn't
not.
be there if there wasn't this massive desire to hide. Okay, so you're not going to make vapes in the form of lipstick unless you know that your potential customer is trying to conceal that from someone around
Yeah,
them, and
and you see,
that's.
and that would be particularly marketed towards younger people who are trying to conceal, because quite honestly, if I'm an adult and I wish to vape, I'll just take the vape out of my handbag,
Yeah.
and I don't have to hide it. So yes, it is very unscrupulous to design them in these way. And the interesting thing about the website that hosts these types of products, if you have a look at them, they're like this healthy outdoor, young people, happy type of marketing that's actually going on. There's no control on that at the minute. There's no legislative control on how you would market that particular type of product
Okay.
either. So we are, look, we're in a new world, and our young people and our parents have to navigate all of these challenges. And really, the navigation of these challenges are to get more informed, to find out more about them. I do go into, and I've been into lots of schools in Donegal and Sligo and Leitrim and that type of thing. And I talk to young people about the vapes and everything, and one of the things, it's the social element as well of the vapes that, there's a little girl who actually went to hospital in Northern Ireland. There's a program on about it, and one of her lungs collapsed because she had asthma. So anybody who's any respiratory difficulty or asthma or anything like that, the risk is heightened with the use of these particular type of
Okay,
products. So
can I bring
parents to be vigilant should be actually telling their children if they have any respiratory difficulty at all, you need to stay away from those vapes.
Okay, and there's one other thing I want to tease out with you in relation to this after we welcome Karen into the conversation. Hi, Karen, what do you think we should be doing?
I think, for a long time in today's world, there's drugs. And I think it's gone well past the stage where we talk to people. I think we need to consistently be in schools from first year, if not sixth year. And we need to do a shock treatment. We need to show what happens to people. Got to take the glamour away from it, and got to tell everyone it's not cool anymore. And it's not just the person that it affects, it's the whole parents, family network, and the things that it leads to. And that it's not cool, but it's tragic. But we got to show that, and we got to shock, and we got to show, like, you, that lady, if she goes round, she's got to show that wee girl that her lung collapsed and you're in a hospital and, you know, it's not cool anymore to be vaping or to be taking drugs. But, like, it's like what she's saying, like, you can make a vape in the form of a lipstick, and I mean, there's people's drinks being spiked and et cetera, et cetera. And we know all about it, but we need to get the young people in a set of minds saying, no, we can't be doing this. Like, but the only way you shock people is to show them, like, you know, the consequences of what can happen. Like, that's whatever chance you have, and you might not even have a chance then, but whatever chance you have, you got to show the worst side of it and what it can do to everybody around you.
All right, Karen, listen, thank you very much for that. Indeed, a lot of people would agree with you, I would say. Christina?
I could add to that that, you know, whenever it comes to the education of younger people, it's all to do with kind of the brain development stage, the age, the context, and whether something is relative to them or not. So I would talk about all the various different types of things, you know, when it comes to young people and what's available to them. And then it's an informed choice, you know, but we need to get the adults just as well informed as the children. The children have access to information. Everybody does nowadays. We have information after information. It's all available online. However, it's the context in which the young people are tempted into using these vapes. But, and that's the social context in which they operate within.
But we also talk about, you know, the maturing brain or the developing brain. The truth be told as well, because we were all young at one time. It's very hard to tell a 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old, maybe their parents are, you know, healthy 35, 40-year-olds, okay? Maybe they've never buried anybody, and I hope they haven't, right? It's very hard to tell them that what you're doing now and you're enjoying now is going to make you go to hospital or you could die from it. You know, and we have the same challenge with speeding and other things. It's you know, you don't have necessarily a sense of peril or mortality at that age.
Yes.
And we sound like fuddy-duddies when we're trying to say, but this is the real world potential consequences.
You're absolutely completely right. And look, this is going right back to Socrates and all of those philosophers back in the day, where this is the way the teenage brain is, and how the teenage brain actually learns is through experience. And that's how we learned. We learned through experience. Some of us will listen to older adults, and some of us, through hearing things or being connected to things, we learn from that. But it is a learning process. Now, the difference is that a lot of people say, you know, go into schools and educate. I'm going to say that children have a lot of access to a lot of information. In fact, they know a lot more about the products than the parents do. But the interesting thing, the biggest influential thing on young people is their peers, you know, and their social world around that age. We stop listening to our parents, the fuddy-duddies, at 15, 16, 13, 14, 15, 16. And it takes a little bit of time between 18 and 24 for our brain to fully develop, you know, right into your 30s. And that's because we're now starting to go through a lot of life experiences, and we find out that certain things are negative. Now, it becomes relative at the time in which you're living in that context. So I could go in and talk to first years. They may not even have been introduced to vapes. That would not be the right thing to do. Do you know what I mean? It depends whether it's around them, it's surrounding them. And that's when we address, we have when the iron, and we bring it into the context of their lives, sport or into health or any of those kind of things, like, then it will be an informed choice.
I just
so
want
after
to bring
that,
one,
it is a choice.
I just
thing.
Want to bring one other element into this just as we wrap things up. And that is, I wonder, are there many parents listening to this show today that their children have a nicotine addiction and they can't get off it? Right. What are we doing to support in this situation? Because, as I say, and I'm not exaggerating it, I smoked and still have a dependency on nicotine, if the truth be told, right? It is incredibly, incredibly hard to get off, especially if you're on the 18, 25 milligram nicotine. It's really, really high level stuff. You cannot punish someone into going off nicotine like that. You can't say, well, if you vape, I'm taking your phone off you. This is an addiction that's up there with heroin, right? So what are we doing, or what can we do to support parents, to support their kids to come off this?
Yeah, I think the first port of call for everybody whenever there is an addiction there is that we do go to the GP. We seek information and advice from the GP to start with. We do have smoking cessation supports and that type of thing. Yes, we may have a little bit of a void when it comes to the under 18s and that, but it is genuinely a nicotine addiction.
Yeah, but what
So
do you do with a
go
15-year-old who's
seek that
addicted?
information
What
from
do you
the
do?
GP.
I mean, do you want to go to the GP with a 15-year-old addicted to nicotine and all the judgment that might come from that? I'm not saying it would be there, but you know, what do you do with a 15 or 16-year-old that's and these vapes now are 18 quid.
Yes, I think that we get over the judgment piece. Okay, get over the judgment piece. And that's what we need to do around addiction. We need to get over the judgment piece. We are all, as individuals and as the human race, we're predisposed towards addiction, believe it or not. We have to actually put controls on ourselves with certain products and certain kind of chemicals and, stuff that we consume. So therefore, and that's down to sugar, that's down to heroin, cocaine, vapes, that type of thing. So get over the judgment piece, go to the GP if the person is under 18 and seek their advice and their help as far as trying to get away from the addiction of nicotine or any other form of addiction. They will refer then to other supports and other help that might be there as well. And that's really the pathway to take, and parents, sometimes we have been kind of a little bit innocent as we have been as a society, that when these vapes came onto the market, we really thought they were an improvement, and they were deliberately and
Yeah,
innocently developed as an improvement.
I'm going to not contradict, disagree, Christina. I think we've been failed by the powers that be here.
Can I explain
the
that,
US
maybe?
the US just let me finish the point if you don't mind, and then I'd love to hear what you have to say. The US government, the vapes over there, they cracked down on it. They got rid of flavors. They got rid of, this was 6, 7 years before us, and I've been sitting in this seat for all of those years saying, when are we going to do something to support parents and protect our teenagers? And really now you can walk into any shop and all of these vapes are still there on display, ready for sale. I was in Galway at the weekend. Three or four, I don't know what's happening to cities now, but it's all vape shops and phone shops. And in the middle of the biggest shopping centre in Galway, there's a CBD vape stall, right? So we are failing, our state, our government are failing parents, in my view, and children. They are foot dragging and a million years behind other countries.
I think it's one of the things that we need to bring up with our political representatives, but definitely the government did legislate from July last year. Maybe they could have done it sooner, but before any government would legislate on anything, they have to have the medical and scientific backup in order to produce that legislation to control. We are moving towards banning the flavours, and what we do know about the research, the scientific research around the nice fruit flavour, they seem to be a little more kind of, I would say, risk based, because the chemicals that are used. And the reason for that would be as well that those flavourings were actually developed for consumption, through eating cakes and biscuits and that type of thing, your strawberry biscuits or whatever. But they have never been created or invented for inhalation into the lungs. Okay, so there's stuff that's used in food. The chemicals used in food are now being put into vapes for flavouring, and they've never been designed. They were designed for ingestion and not inhalation, so they're causing problems as
Of
well.
course, and I don't think we should
So,
have to wait for the
Greg, we
science
are
to
in the
get rid of that.
work. We are definitely in a more risk-based
Okay.
world. We need to equip our young people and our parents. We need to equip our parents as well for navigating through the things that are going to be.
Okay. Oh, righty-o. We've had a bit of a freeze there, but we got all the views there. Thank you very much indeed, Christina McElhenney, Alcohol and Other Drugs Coordinator. If you have any views in relation to this, particularly if you are stuck, if, I think many of us out there have I think when children get to a certain age, it's up to them what they do. We can only influence them so much. But I think we certainly have a situation where there's parents out there worried that their 15, 14, 15, 16-year-old have very strong nicotine addictions. What do you do? You've seen your child go crazy when they can't get access to nicotine. Are you willfully buying them for them? I'm not judging here because I know how powerful nicotine is, but is that what's going on as well? That we are sort of saying, well, we're going to have to facilitate it because the addiction is so strong?
Get the full picture. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
My son was taking a HHC vape. I didn't know he was vaping. He was 17 and got addicted. Was one of the people that had an adverse reaction in his brain, was psychotic. He ended up in worse psychosis. Very ill in hospital for 6 months, still affected on medication. Now, as a family, we were good parents and totally devastated indeed. And some things are, no matter how hard we try or how good we are, outside of our control. And I hope he's doing better now. Shock treatment doesn't work, says another listener. Take it from someone who started smoking at the height of black lungs on the TV. They'd roll their eyes as you tell them because they know better than you in their own head. Shops need cracked down on. I was getting served from 15 because they never, ever ID'd unless you looked like a baby. Another caller says, in a show, as a serious drug problem, I've heard some crazy stories. Silly old opinionated woman preaching from the moral high ground are only laughed at and mocked by young people, even they mean well, an age-old story. There isn't a particular hotspot, I don't think, for drug misuse, drug abuse. I think it's actually really quite widespread, but I imagine that caller is calling from an Inishowen. It's the take-up of vaping by non-smokers that's a big problem. That's what troubles me. I agree with you. Another caller agrees with Karen. More emphasis needs to be put on people that vape, regardless of age. They could experience a heart attack. And another here, as a teacher, I feel a lot of parents are vaping and taking drugs and see no harm in what they're doing. Very often, the problem today stems from the parents and issues in the homes. It's time parents looked at their lifestyles and their choices. And more and more of your texts and comments coming in on the issue of vaping. Right. Donegal is said to lag behind the national average for survival rates for breast cancer. The five-year survival rate in this county is 87.1%. Actually, it's lower than that. It's Mary T. Sweeney, ain't to rep for Donegal, joins me now. Ain't to Mary T. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning.
Good morning. I just glanced at these figures and I thought the Donegal rate was lower. What is the five-year survival rate in Donegal compared to the national average?
Well, it's 87.1%, okay. But that's for the invasive female with breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be thinking it maybe in relation to overall oncology results.
Uh-huh. That's at the 80%. That's at the 80%. Okay. This data was obtained by your party leader. What's your reading of it? What's it telling you?
Well, the most alarming part for me in reading it, and I only got this late last night, and I'm absolutely horrified to think that there's a 14% variation in breast cancer survival rates around Ireland. And what's even equally disturbing is there's a 12% difference in the survival outcome between women that have been diagnosed either in a public hospital as opposed in a private hospital as opposed to a public hospital. And where's the managing skills? Where's the accountability here? And why is our health service not offered out on an equal, you know, basis across the country? This should not be a case of, you know, depending on where you go, your location should not diagnose whether the quality of treatment or the longevity of your life following a diagnosis as drastic as this.
Mm. And I think it really, and it's probably not up to us, but up to the HSE, the powers that be, to scrutinise why there are these variables, just literally dependent on where you live.
Completely. It blows me out. I'm actually going to make further inquiries because Cavan seems to be scoring the highest at 94.8%. What does that tell us? That there's more staff resources there? Is there more funding? There are as many questions for me from reading this as there are statements, you know, going through the list of hospitals, well, regional areas identified by. And I did take into account the idea of, you know, private hospitals being in Dublin because they're coming out in the middle, the median sort of in the grid. But it concerns me why there's such a disparity or variation in the survival rates, because 14% is huge. And so is then to think whether you're private or public, a 12% difference. That variation is unacceptable. And really, there has to be further questions asked. Why is there such a difference?
Yeah.
These discrepancies really do highlight many, many critical challenges we have to overcome in our health service.
Yeah, so if you go to Limerick, 80.3% invasive female breast cancer, 5-year survival rate. Cavan, 94.3%. There's something seriously amiss there, isn't there? Now, we are in the middle there around the national average. But this is an issue you can't be too parochial on. You know, why can't we get up to close to 95% like Cavan, for an example? We don't need to settle for 87.1 or tap ourselves on the back because we're, you know, 7 points ahead of Limerick. What, you know, we need to advocate for Limerick women too. What's going on now? We know the challenges that are at the Limerick hospital. You know, when we see trolley numbers and overcrowding, totally, I mean, it's hard not to make, it's hard not to make, isn't it, a direct connection between how that main hospital in that area is running versus the survival rates for women there.
Again, and like, we need the government department, the minister did make some sort of, I would consider it a flippant comment to say they're committed to improving cancer care, ensuring better prevention, maintaining improvement. That is just literally lifted out of a press release, you know what I mean? And I don't think that's good enough. I don't think it's appropriate. And I think the minister instead should have been saying, this is alarming. We are going to immediately review and look and see why there's such a variation in the survival rates in breast cancer for women, for mothers, for grannies, for whoever. You know, we need to ask those questions, not to make a flippant remark to say that, you know, we are doing, trying to do better.
Something that jumped out at me too, because you know, you want to compare like with like, or things that feel comparable. There's two Northwest hospitals, two Northwest counties, Sligo University Hospital, Sligo, 91.5% 5-year net survival rate for the period 2018 to 2022, compared to us here in Donegal, 87.1%. Now, I'm not sure if these break down by hospital attended or where you live, but if you're in Bundoran and your treatment plan is in Sligo, but you're in Ballybofey and your treatment plan is Letterkenny, on the face of it, there would seem to be a 4% difference in your potential survival rate. That is very significant, and that also is something that needs to be scrutinised. My point is if this is based on the hospital which you attend, we actually could have a 4% discrepancy within the county.
100%. And I was just in the process of doing up the list of the sale to group to go through it. I was going to actually start and do a breakdown myself of the different hospital groups. So I was looking at the University Hospital Galway, which I am shocked at because it's our centre of excellence. It's where we're being sent. And again, you know, when you look at Galway, Galway's sitting at 86%, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that figure takes in the account of because there are private hospitals in Galway, I'm aware of, then does that mean that it's the private hospitals keeping that success rate through the private consultations are keeping the number elevated?
But
I think there's a lot of questions coming out of this.
But what we also have to factor in, there's a lot going on here, right? So say, for instance, access to breast check. So it's not just necessarily, we can't presume that everyone turns up at the hospital at the same stage of the disease. So I understand that you're firing shots across the bow at the health minister, but we also have to make sure that someone who's out there in the public eye, or me on this programme, to make sure that it's not that Donegal women are presenting later, for an example, or that access to breast screening. You know, we have to make sure that we're not sort of going right to the very top and blaming the powers that be. Do we need to have a conversation here? Are we presenting too late? Do you know that sort of a way? Or have we a higher incidence of...
That, I think that's extremely important. And I hadn't even got to that stage of process of thinking that yet, Greg, because of the fact I was trying to work out regionally. Why would this be happening? You know, there has to be somebody. Do we have like a quantity assurance person in the hospital management system that knows more about this? I think we need to ask further questions, not to point fingers at any minister. There is no point in doing that because that will achieve, in my opinion, very little outcome. Whereas if you present them with questions that you need addressed, then it enforces them to go and do further research and make themselves satisfied. Is this the best we can offer?
Because I've done stories in the past of, you know, use it or lose it in terms of breast check locations or people not turning up when they should turn up. This is not in any way to patient blame. That's not what I'm getting at. But I can't help but think, are these same challenges in getting people to get their breast check the same in Cavan, for an example? Or is this something, because we're such critical thinkers here, or we're too brave for our own good, or whatever it might be? As I say, I think we need a deep dive into, you know, when people are presenting, are we later here? Do we need to do more in that regard? You know, do we need to try and reach women and impress on them the importance of attending breast check or making sure they're on the register and so on and so forth? But we can't just sit idly by. We've no intention of doing that either, Mary T, obviously.
That's exactly what I mean. And I'm taking note of your point, and it'll be one of the points that I put back, to go back with the PQ to the minister and ask for a greater investigation into this. And I think that's the most positive thing we can do as anybody that's a political rep or in the community, or the fantastic work done by the groups, you know, the cancer groups in here in Donegal, the likes of Betty Holmes and that, keeping awareness high profile. Is it a case that there should be, you know, more public support to encourage people in, you know? And I didn't know, I had a few people complaining to me recently, and I'm not sure if it's still going on, where they had to travel to Donegal Town at one stage for their breast check clinic. And I will actually investigate, is that still happening? Because people were having difficulties because they didn't have cars and they didn't have the money to pay for a taxi.
We covered that extensively. I think since then there might have been some service provided remotely in Inishowen, but we'll need to double check on that. Mary T. Sweeney, thanks for helping us highlight that issue, though. I do appreciate it. Welcome into the second hour of the programme. Coming up in the not too distant future, we have Community Garda Information. Garda Grania Doherty is going to be joining me with the latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána. But first, I'm delighted to welcome into the studio from Clonmany, Matthew Friel. Good morning to you, Matthew.
Morning.
Thank you so very much for joining us. And we also have with us Bernie Walsh, Liaison Officer with CI Buncrana. Good morning to you, Bernie. Now, Matthew, you've been doing some excellent advocacy work, okay? Because you've been calling for Buncrana to be made more accessible. And just for listeners, Matthew is a wheelchair user. So, Matthew, what do you want to talk about? You first raised your concerns about using your wheelchair, didn't you?
Yeah.
So what, you had a meeting with the council. Talk to us about it, Matthew.
The ramps in Buncrana are bumpy or broken footpaths.
And this is a problem for you, right? So when you're trying to get around Buncrana...
Yeah.
Is it very bumpy? Now, you're in a powered wheelchair, but still it's difficult for you to get around. Is that correct?
Yeah. I have to get up Buncrana Main Creek and get across there. And all my friends can get across, but I can't.
So you have to use the long way whilst your friends can sort of... And there are drop curves, but they're not flat with the road, are they?
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, good problem.
Okay. So you, rather than just sort of going, there's a problem here, Matthew, you met with Stephen Glacken, who's an area engineer with the council, and you wanted to show him, say, look, this is what it's like.
Yeah.
Was that a good meeting?
Yeah, very good.
And did you get the sense that, you know, they hope to do something about it?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Do you sometimes get frustrated that unless you're a wheelchair user, you don't understand how bad the roads can actually be?
Yeah, great. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And also, it mustn't be nice for you when your friends can cross in certain places and you can't.
Yeah.
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 And is it just Buncrana?
Yeah.
Other places as well?
All the places as well.
Okay. Right, well, you jump in whenever you want to speak, Matthew, because I want to bring Bernie in here as well, by the way, so you can cut across me and Bernie. Don't you worry about that, right? Isn't it excellent, Bernie, that we have someone in? If you could just come a little bit closer. Isn't it excellent that we have Matthew here who has first-hand experience and raising the issue with the powers that be in the council?
Absolutely, Greg. And the issue came up at an advocacy meeting, and that's what I do. I facilitate the advocacy meetings where the service users sit around and we talk about, I suppose, issues that are important to them, and it can be good issues or it can be negative issues. So the very first meeting that I had with Matthew was in October, and he was ready and waiting for me. He had this issue ready, so we talked about it, and we talked about what would happen and what the next steps would be. So it was, seeing who in the council we would raise it with. Matthew penned a letter to the council setting out the issue. But importantly, he had said in that letter, it wasn't just for him as a wheelchair user. This impacted other people that maybe are using walking frames, parents with buggies.
Yeah, you thought it important, Michael, didn't you? Matthew, sorry.
Yeah.
It's the wider community.
Yeah, very.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pram pushers.
Yeah. And wheelchair users.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And Bernie, this is grand, right, to get the information out there, but it's important too that people like Matthew's listen to.
Absolutely. And that's, I'll go back to the advocates meeting. That's an opportunity for them to have their voices raised, and then they're supported then in going to wherever it is, whether it's the Gardaí, the local authority, a local business, etc., to say it out, what the issue is, and hopefully get it resolved.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that the service supported Matthew in doing the video of him going up the street, and you can physically see the head bopping up on the footpath. Right. So it really makes it real. I could walk up the street, and we walk past all of these obstacles and not thinking of them. So it's very real when you see it like that.
Talk to me about that, Matthew.
Yeah. I'm feeling my chair will top over.
That's terrible, isn't it? You know, that you've that fear that it could go over on you. And that's just on the footpath, right?
Yeah.
And you're bouncing around.
Yeah.
And you need better suspension.
Yeah.
Do you? And, in terms of the curbs, right, even in a powered wheelchair, can your chair get stuck?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even if it's dropped down, if there can be a gap like that, she won't lift over that.
No.
Yeah. And other towns too. Is there any town that you enjoy going to that's doing it well? Can you think off the top of your head? I think that's the problem, isn't it, Matthew? It's that they're all the same. Because we heard this about Raphoe, Letterkenny, Dunloe.
Yeah.
We should be doing much, much better.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And getting in and out of a car.
Yeah.
Is that problematic in some towns as well?
No.
Oh. That's not too bad.
No.
But there are issues in other places, aren't there, whereby, Bernie, the spaces that are allocated for vehicles, they don't allow maybe for the boot to open. If the person is driving the vehicle, it doesn't account for that necessarily.
There's sufficient space, but also because sometimes those spaces are taken up with people who shouldn't be taking them up. And that's a real issue as well. Or people who park inappropriately, who park up in the footpath as well.
Yeah.
That's another issue for Matthew and other people. And again, parents with buggies that you're forced out onto the road.
Sandwich boards.
Yeah.
All of these obstacles that, as I say, we think nothing of, we walk around them. Oh, but for people with buggies or wheelchairs.
Wheelie bins. I never thought of wheelie bins. Yeah. They be sitting out, do they?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose anything really that. But the thing is just. We don't do it, a lot of people don't do it for bad reasons. It's just not thinking.
Yeah.
It's just not. And that's why, Matthew, it's so amazing that you've come down to speak to us, right?
Yeah.
Because it reminds us that you do need to think.
Yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely.
I just feel that we need to sort of get past highlighting sort of random problems here, there and everywhere. And I wonder too, we just need to do an audit, I think, of our surfaces, the drop curves, where they actually work, where they don't work, the roughness of footpaths, Because, Matthew, you don't want to be putting up with this for years and years and years, do you?
No.
All right, okay. Do you like being on the radio, Matthew?
I
No bother to you, sir. Yeah, you're doing fantastic. Brilliant stuff. Well done. Bernie, what next then?
Well, as Matthew said, we had the meeting with the council engineer yesterday. Yeah. And in fairness, he was very open and receptive, and but did mention that term within budget. So, but we did remind him, because some of the issues, they're real health and safety issues. So, you know, where there's a risk there, well, money needs to be found.
Matthew knows, Matthew knows his chair, and if he gets a sense that he could topple over on a footpath, that's health and safety.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And that trumps anything and everything.
Because we've done issues in the path where there was a slightly raised curve and there was a couple of tripping instances.
Yep.
You know, able-bodied people had tripped. Yep. We talk about it, next thing you know, that's fixed, right? Yep. Yet we have Matthew here and others who feel the concern that they could topple over, and it's budgets.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? So there's something amiss there. Not blaming any individuals in the councils, right? But this is a societal issue, really, here, isn't it? Bernie, you mentioned the video. I didn't realise that Matthew was a TV star as well as a radio star. So talk to me about this video.
There was a video, and it was shared on the Donegal Live
Facebook page.
Yeah.
And it's of Matthew.
It's of Matthew going up the street, and it's someone videoing on him. And so you can physically see.
Great.
The
we'll
impact.
Share that as well. You might get that to us, Matthew. That really tells the story, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything anyone wants to add before we wrap up?
I suppose all of this really, Greg, is what you would call good trouble. And I don't know whether you heard that term before. It's a term that was used during the American Civil Rights. And it was, you know, when the black people were looking for their rights. So it's about kind of raising issues that are right. And it might be seen by some as creating trouble or creating a bit of hassle. But like when the service users last year brought up the transport cost issue and, you know, where people are bringing up issues that kind of might be ruffling a few feathers, it's called good trouble. So that's what we're about in the advocacy groups.
100%. Yeah. And fair play to you, Matthew, for leading out on this campaign. And I think, you know, you haven't just talked about it or whatever. You got the powers that be on the ground and said, look at this, you know. There was an experiment done years and years ago down in Donegal Town where some county councillors tried to navigate Donegal Town in a wheelchair between sandwich boards, drop curbs, uneven curbs, and they really got it. Maybe that's what we need to do next in Buncrana. Matthew, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, all right. Listen, thanks so much for calling
down. No, Greg, my phone, you
bit of a day trip. Is there anything else you want to add, Matthew? Or are you happy enough?
Happy enough.
Yeah, we'll let you know how we get on.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, we'll stay in touch because you know everyone's entitled to the same experience as much as is possible. Matthew Friel, all the way from Clonmany. Thank you so very much, and brilliant work in what you've done in Buncrana and raising the issue, and we hope positive comes from it.
Thank you very much.
And also Bernie Walsh, liaison officer with CI Buncrana, thank you so much for making the trip down. We really do appreciate it. It's time for Community Garda information, and our guest this week is Garda Grainne Doherty from Letterkenny Garda Station. Good morning, Grainne.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for calling up to see us. We'll get straight into the appeals. There's a lot to get through. And we'll start with investigations ongoing into a road traffic collision in Letterkenny.
Yes, Gardaí and Emergency Services attended the scene of a road traffic collision at Lower Main Street, Letterkenny, on Thursday the 15th of January. The collision involved a car and a male pedestrian, and it occurred at approximately 1 p.m. The pedestrian, who was aged in his 80s, was conveyed to Letterkenny University Hospital for medical treatment, and his injuries are not believed to be life-threatening in nature. No other injuries were reported at the time. So Gardaí are now appealing to anybody who may have witnessed this collision to contact them. Any road users who may have camera footage, dash cam footage, and who are travelling in that area between 12:15 and 1:15 p.m. on Thursday the 15th of January, they're asked to make this footage available to the investigating team. Anybody with information is asked to contact Letterkenny Garda Station on 9167100, the Garda Confidential line on 1800 666 111 or any Garda station, and investigations are ongoing into that matter.
As they are in Milford, a road traffic collision on the main street there.
Yes, this collision occurred at Main Street, Milford, on Tuesday the 13th of January at approximately midday. This collision involved a van and two pedestrians. These pedestrians, a woman and a child, were taken to Letterkenny University Hospital to receive medical treatment for non-life-threatening injuries. The driver was not injured. We're appealing to anybody who might have witnessed this collision to contact Gardaí in Milford on 9153060. And again, if anybody travelled in that area with a dash cam around that time, we're asking them, please, as always, make that footage available to us.
Now, to your colleagues in Inishowen, investigating an incident of dangerous driving.
Yes, this incident occurred of dangerous driving occurred on the Aileach Road down near the shorefront in Buncrana in the early hours of Saturday, the 17th of January, between approximately midnight to 12:15 that night. The vehicle involved was a white Seat Leon with a partial registration of 12DL. A parked car in the car park at the shorefront in the car park there was struck by the Seat Leon during the course of this incident. The driver didn't remain at the scene, so we're appealing to anybody who might have travelled in the area of the Aileach Road along the shorefront or on the Swilly Road heading towards the pier between midnight and 12:30 with a dash cam to make that footage available to investigating Gardaí. Any relevant information can be forwarded to Gardaí in Buncrana on 9320540.
And there's a lot of good information in that appeal. There's someone out there knows something. It's just a case of getting it to Gardaí, as you've advised there. Right, we'll move on to a criminal damage incident in Stranorlar.
Yes, this incident occurred in the parking area at Collins Hall, Stranorlar. It's an apartment block there. It's quite close to the Bus Éireann Yard in Stranorlar near the bridge. A car was parked in that area between 12 p.m. on Saturday the 17th of January and 9:30 a.m. on Monday the 19th of January, during which time damage was caused to it. So quite substantial damage was caused along the driver's side of the car. It was keyed and the bonnet was also keyed between those times. So repeating to anybody, maybe residents in that apartment block particularly, if anybody observed any suspicious activity in that area, to get in contact with Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530.
Now, a reappeal in relation to a scooter taken from Letterkenny.
Yes, we're reissuing this appeal in relation to, it was the theft of a Coucheron G2 e-scooter from Manorview Park, Letterkenny, on Sunday the 11th of January at about 3:50 p.m. Two males in their mid to late teens approached the rear of a property in that estate, and one of them, he was wearing a black jumper with the North Face in large white writing in the front of it, black tracksuit bottoms, black coat, and he had his hood up and black trainers. He stole the scooter, left in the direction then of the Long Lane, and the second youth also had dark clothing on and had his hood up. We're appealing to anybody who might have observed these youths in the area to get in touch with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167100. If anybody travelled in that area of Manorview Park or the Long Lane area between 3:30 and 4:30 on that date with a dash cam, we're asking them to please contact us. So the Garda Confidential line can be contacted on 1800 666 111, and given the time of day, you know, this was 3:50 p.m. so the roads would have been quite busy at that time, so we're hopeful somebody will have some information to assist in relation to
that. Yeah,
indeed,
matter. And maybe they'd have missed it the last time. Okay, now an appeal this time in relation to the attempted entry of a van.
Yes, so this happened in the area of the Canal Road, Letterkenny, on Tuesday the 13th of January, shortly before 8:10 a.m. So a business owner, there was a delivery driver at a business premises. He alerted the business owner to the fact that a man appeared to be gaining access to one of the company vans outside the premises. So the man in question fled upon being observed by this delivery driver. He was wearing a black puffer jacket, denim jeans and black trainers. He had quite dark hair, black hair. He didn't gain access to the van and no damage was caused. And CCTV is being viewed from that area. And as part of our investigation, we're also appealing to anybody who might have travelled in that area with a dash cam on Tuesday, January 13th, between 8 a.m. and 8:30 a.m. to make this footage available to Gardaí, or if anybody observed this man in the area on foot. Gardaí and Letterkenny can be contacted on 9167100 with relevant information. And just on that note, we're just asking any business owners, you know, if any of them wish to conduct a security review, this is something that should be done quite regularly anyway. If they wish to conduct a security review of their premises and the surrounds of it, they're welcome to make contact with Sergeant Fergus McGrory, or Divisional Crime Prevention Officer, in Letterkenny on 9167100. or by email at dg.crimeprevention@garda.ie, and he'll be very happy to call out to assist and to advise.
Yeah, and in that instance, a good description, black puffer jacket, denim jeans and black trainers, potentially might have found another way out of the area.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily have to observe somebody in the alleged act either. So there's someone out there could have good information. Right, the ongoing issue and the ongoing work from An Garda Síochána Síochána to highlight and address the life-threatening issue of driving under the influence, Grainne.
Yeah, and road safety remains a priority, of course, and Gardaí are out on a daily basis conducting checkpoints, met checkpoints and speed checks along the roads. And over the course of the last week, so from last Tuesday till today, 9 drivers have been arrested across the county on suspicion of driving while under the influence of both drugs and alcohol. So 7 of these arrests were in relation to drug driving offences and 2 in relation to drink driving offences. We're just appealing to all drivers, please never get behind the wheel of any type of vehicle while you're under the influence of either drugs or alcohol. And if you're aware that an incident of drink or drug driving is taking place, or if you're aware that it's about to take place, you know, if you're in a pub and you see somebody leaving, you're aware that they've been drinking all evening and you see them lift their keys and head for the car park, please contact Gardaí. You know, you could save a life by ringing us. You could save many lives.
That is the bottom line too, and it's really interesting. And I know the detections can fluctuate between drink and drugs, but, you know, over the course of us doing this, Grainne, it was interesting, and of course some of it comes down to the technology available to Gardaí, but, you know, drink up here, drugs a bit lower, then parity, and now quite regularly the drug detections are ahead of the drink detections, and it's all driving inebriated, all driving under the influence of a be it alcohol or drugs.
Yeah, and it seems that the detections in relation to drug driving, as you rightly said, have risen, you know, in comparison with the drug driving detections. All right.
Yeah, indeed. Right, now, the scammers are always at it, right? We always have to stay one step ahead of them, but often we're chasing them up because they're so inventive in how they try and get rid of our stuff for their benefit. What's going on this time?
Yes, well, this is a scam now, and there have been different types of scams, various types of scams in relation to people impersonating members of An Garda Síochána. We've seen the emails before, you know, these emails that say that you're wanted in relation to a certain type of offence and you have to reply. But this seems to be a new type of scam now. So we wish to warn the public in relation to it. The scammers are once again impersonating members of An Garda Síochána. So this scam, it aims to obtain personal information such as your bank account details via a WhatsApp call. The caller is using An Garda Síochána's crest as their profile photo. So in order to protect yourself from these scams, be suspicious of unsolicited messages or calls. Never disclose personal details over the phone. If you get a call, if you're cold called from somebody saying they're a member of An Garda Síochána, if they're looking for your bank details, your PPS number, any type of personal information like that, ask them for their credentials and ring the Garda station then to verify. If you've been a victim of this or any other type of scam, please contact your bank or financial institution immediately and, of course, report it to Gardaí also. And if you believe that you have engaged with such a scam, please do contact us and make us aware of it so we can look into the matter.
And people, and I would probably do it if I was listening, people go, come on, Gardaí calling on WhatsApp. That's not how it works, though, because in the moment it's the shock and awe. That's what they're. That's why they pretend to be the Gardaí. And sometimes, and I've been on the end of this, the logic goes out the window when you know you can very quickly make that mistake. And it's not a mistake. These people are very good at what they do. Not to give them any credit, but always report it because that's how we can help get the information out there. Right, some drop-in events coming up.
Yes, so these are community Garda drop-in events. These take place regularly across the county, but there's 2 coming up now in the coming weeks. So the first one will take place on Monday, January 26th between 6 and 7pm at the Family Resource Centre in Raphoe. The second one will be held on Wednesday, the 28th of January at St Johnstone and Carrigan's Family Resource Centre. It's also between 6pm and 7pm. So please feel free to call to either of these events if you need to get any documents signed or if you want advice, information. And everybody's also very welcome to call in for a friendly chat. And I think a number of people do that at these events. They don't have any forms with them, but they just want to call in for a chat. And they're more than welcome to do that. We'd be delighted to see
touch
them.
Touch base. And from a Garda perspective, those little chats, not that you're there seeking information, but it's good to have that connection, isn't it, with the community, and you never know what might come up for discussion. Granny, thank you very much indeed.
No problem.
Appreciate it. That is Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 20th of January. It's available for you to listen back on our podcast at around about 11:30, but also you can watch back on our socials not long thereafter. And it's back live on the radio for you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Before we go to the break, wish my sister Emmeline Boner Campbell, Emmeline or Emmeline?
Emmeline,
okay. Wish my sister Emmeline Boner Campbell a happy 60th birthday from brother Martin Gargunnock, Scotland. Gargunnock?
You'll have to spell that one for me now for me to attempt it.
Paul, I could do this one. Paul McDevitt, who was on the radio last night. Of course, happy birthday, Paul, from Debbie Sweeney. Emmeline Campbell from Strabane, 60 today, from your loving husband Jerry and your brother Martin. So we saw the headlines this morning. Revenue chases thousands of family carers for unpaid tax, and we want to make sure we get the best information out there for those who might be affected by this. Catherine Cox is Head of Communications and Policy at Family Carers Ireland. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, has this come out of the blue, Catherine?
Okay, I suppose there's a few things to say here. So it hasn't come out of the blue. However, I think the way it has been corresponded to carers has caused distress and anxiety. So just a few things maybe to say first. So carers allowance and carers benefit, they have always been taxable sources of income. Now, it's something we have fought with government to change. We believe they should be exempt from tax, but they're not, and they have always been taxable income. And in the past, right up to December of 2025, a carer in receipt of those payments had to self-declare that they're getting the payment to revenue, and then they were taxed on that. So it's always been taxable. What is changing is, rather than the responsibility being on the carer from January this year forward, the Department of Social Protection will share the information with revenue, and so the carer will not have to self-declare. So they will still pay tax, but it will be done automatically. Mm. So that's the first thing to say. So nothing has changed in terms of the taxing situation. Now, what happened then is, so revenue wrote to thousands, there's about 100,000 family carers getting carers allowance or carers benefit. Now, many of those won't have a tax liability because their income would be quite low. That's another thing to say. But there will be a number of carers who are in receipt of it who, going forward, may have a tax liability. And I think that's really important to say, that government or that revenue are not looking backwards, but they are going from the 1st of January forward, where a carer is in receipt of carers allowance, they may have a tax liability, and that will be deducted at source.
So in relation Catherine, do we know, are revenue trying to recruit unpaid tax then? Because they, of course, have access to people's income, the tax brackets they might be in. They have access now to the payments they may well have received through being a carer. Are you saying they're not going to be looking to recoup previous year's tax?
That is what we have been told, that it is going from the 1st of January forward that revenue will be looking at this. So it and look, it absolutely should not be retrospective. And I believe that is the case. Now, we have a meeting with revenue. We've looked for an urgent meeting. We're meeting them on Thursday, and absolutely we'll be putting these questions to them. I think what's really important to say here is two things. Like, we have for years called on government to make this a payment that is exempt from tax. It is work that carers do. As you know, they save or say 20 billion euro every year. We should be supporting them, not penalising them. So carers allowance should be a non-means tested payment and exempt from tax. And I think this is a wake-up call to the government to do just that and to action that. So, I think for carers out there as well.
Yeah, I'm just saying, are some media reports of, you know, a man in his 80s expecting a bill of 6,000 for the last 3 years. It's really important that we get absolute clarity from revenue ASAP, because whilst it would be distressing if people have to pay tax going forward, for these people who may well already be under a great deal of stress, if they feel they could be liable to revenue for thousands of euros going back as far as 3 years, that's a whole other level of stuff. So I think the sooner that's clarified, and I know you're making efforts to do that, I struggle to imagine that revenue is going to wave away tax, to be honest with you, Catherine, but you seem to have information to suggest they might.
What they're saying is that they will look at it from the 1st of January 2026 going forward. So that's what we have been told. Now, we absolutely will have sought clarification on that. And there is, can I give you a revenue helpline number that they have given, just if there are carers out there who are concerned. But remember, this is meant to be from the 1st of January going forward. So the revenue number is 01-738-3637. And that is a helpline number specifically set up for carers on this issue. Look, it has caused distress, anxiety. And the last thing we want is for carers who are already under severe stress and pressure doing the work that they do to now have this additional stress. So anything that revenue can do to clarify that would be most welcome. But also, I think we really need to push this back on government as well. Do the right thing. Make carers allowance. Make it a payment that is adequate, first of all, because this payment now is being treated like an income or a wage. Mm. Yet carers get none of the benefits of getting a wage, like they don't get any paid holidays, paid leave. So we're treating it as a wage, but it's nowhere near the minimum wage. And it's also it's penalising carers who are already in a really difficult situation. So any clarity we can get, we will from revenue.
And I presume they're being penalised at the highest rate of tax they might be liable to as well. For some people, this is going to put people.
Yeah, it may not.
It may not, okay.
But because many carers, by nature of getting the payment, because it's a means-tested payment,
true.
The income in the household, may not be that high. However, we have been told there will be some carers with a liability. Now, for years, most carers have been claiming that and have been, claiming that they're receiving the income. So for many, it will have no effect. Yeah. It just means rather than them having to do it, the revenue and social protection would do it.
But for some, there is another thing in there.
There may well be a bill going forward.
If you don't mind me saying so, I think the majority of people providing care are going to be women. And, if they're taking the total household income, it may be that the husbands in inverted commas. So effectively, you could have women here working in this space for less money, and it's just an imbalance there. And it's nice to have your own income, so it puts people sort of more reliant on the other half, so to speak. And there's no problem with that, but I think you get where I'm coming from, Catherine. This is probably going to hit women harder and reduce
it,
their.
It absolutely will. I mean, the majority of women, particularly women in receipt of carers allowance, the figures, I think it's 90% plus of the people in receipt of carers allowance are women, so it will. But look, I suppose rather than putting the fear of God in everybody, if you have been getting this payment and you've been declaring it as income, nothing will change for you. If you have been getting this payment and haven't declared it as income, from the 1st of January forward, it will automatically be declared to revenue. So in that situation, a carer should do nothing. And from now on, it will be declared to revenue. So there will be a number of carers who that may affect. There's no doubt about it.
I just can't see revenue doing some sort of an amnesty. I hope they do. But we'll have to wait till you have that meeting for absolute clarity. And I do appreciate we have to make sure that we don't put the fear of God into people, but actually also to make sure everyone has the facts. Catherine Cox, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Look after yourself. Catherine is Head of Communications and Policy at Family Carers Ireland. Carers are saving the state billions and should not be taxed, believes the listener. It would fit revenue better to go after overpaid politicians over claiming on expenses or who have not paid back monies owed through their pension schemes. Morning, Greg. This government is a disaster. They've opened borders, giving handouts and freebies to all except Irish families. They're being taxed to the hilt. Thank you. Another, Greg, just listening to the show. I know someone personally who was a carer and has had to pay back tax to revenue for the last 3 years, as she didn't know she was to declare it to revenue. She got a letter before Christmas and had to get it sorted. I'm not for a second doubting Catherine. I hope I'm proven wrong. I'm very sceptical that revenue will give some sort of an amnesty on tax before January 1st. And I hope people aren't then stuck with a 3 years tax bill and then having to do some sort of a payment plan or something. We'll get clarification on it. And as soon as we do, I'll bring it to you. It's just not revenue doing revenue things. A caller says, shame on revenue, though. What about the 10 TDs who still owe thousands of euro and have not yet started a payback scheme? Always after the less well-off than the well-heeled. Time for more to put the boot in and make the well-paid TDs pay their way. Kevin, thank you for that. Interesting conversation on vapes. It's got a lot of you talking. Yes, you're right, Greg. There are more young ones vaping now than ever were smoking. It's a craze that hasn't gone away. It's so harmful with so many side effects. More on this morning, Greg. Vaping is a massive, massive problem in our society. I'm a local photographer and I cover a lot of proms and TY proms, etc. I'm always astounded as to the high percentage of young people that vape at these events. I'd estimate at least 80% of the kids at these proms seem to vape. The amount of times I've had to Photoshop vapes out of photos is crazy too, and a constant pain in the bum. Another, it's almost as if a black market exists because the government refuses to listen to the science and citizens' assembly to legalise and regulate cannabis. Almost as if there were cannabis clubs or legal dispensaries, then the black market would lose a massive amount of income and organised crime would fall. Well, what we're talking about here is not sort of cannabis CBD oils or that. We're talking about synthetic drugs that have elements of it. But listen, these are 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old children. And I stand by my opinion earlier on that we are years behind. And I think there are generations of young ones vaping because we didn't do enough to stop them getting access to these products. They never smoked. Now they're stuck on 18 milligrams of nicotine and it's a nightmare to get off. Back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Thank you so much for listening.